Easter Sunday. Canada is deploying aircraft and military planners to Eastern Europe to send a blunt message to Vladimir Putin. Let's get started here on Question Period.
I believe this to be a long-term, serious threat to global peace and security.
Six CF-18 fighter jets and 20 Canadian military personnel headed across the pond to join a NATO mission in Eastern Europe.
Obviously, this is in response to the situation that's developing there.
Details from the Defense Minister's Parliamentary Secretary and a former Air Force commander on what's at stake. Plus, are changes coming to the Fair Elections Act?
I'm prepared to defend every single measure in the Fair Elections Act.
The Senate wants amendments to the Democratic Reform Minister's hotly contested bill. Senator Linda Fromm on why she had to challenge her caucus member. And the opposition leader refuses to support the changes. How far will he go to stop this bill?
We're going to make sure that as many Canadians as possible understand that this is really important.
The NDP leader will join us.
NATO is stepping up its presence near Russia's borders, deploying fighter jets, warships, and more troops in the Baltic region. Moves designed to reassure NATO members unnerved by Moscow's action in Ukraine. James Bazin, the Parliamentary Secretary of the Minister of Defense, joins me from Winnipeg to explain why Canada answered the call. Mr. Bazin, top diplomats from the United States, Europe, Russia, and the Ukraine reached an agreement apparently to try to ease the crisis in Ukraine. Calls on all sides to refrain from violence, intimidation, or provocative actions. So why are we sending fighter jets if the goal is to de-escalate the situation in Ukraine?
Well, that is still the ultimate goal, Bob, is that we do have a de-escalation, that Russia stops their aggression, that they stop their provocative military maneuvers that they're doing not only outside of Ukraine, but we're seeing on the ground with special op forces overtaking government buildings throughout the Donetsk Oblast. So it is important that those talks continue and that we move diplomatically to avoid a full-out military incursion. But with that said, as the Prime Minister said on Thursday, we need to still be very concerned about what is happening with Russia in Ukraine. There is a number of NATO states that are quite concerned about Russia's continued aggression, and some of those NATO members are former member states of the former Soviet Union and have legitimate concerns. And of course, under Article 5, we have responsibilities as a partner of NATO to provide support. And all member states have committed now to bolstering military assets within the region, especially in Central and Eastern Europe. And Canada is stepping up and doing our part because we have been steadfast in our support of NATO and steadfast in our support for the people of Ukraine.
And do we expect that if Putin doesn't rein himself in, that we're going to get a lot more tougher sanctions and possibly seeing Canadian ground troops move to Europe?
Well, I think we're going to continue to move on the sanction side. The member states of NATO are quite clear in protecting NATO states. So those countries are the ones that we are committed to from a military standpoint, that an attack on one is an attack on all. So we will continue to move with our allies in lockstep in further isolating President Putin, the kleptocrats that surround him in the Kremlin, and of course continue to bring up forward the appropriate measures to hopefully de-escalate the situation in Ukraine and other member states who are also have the same concerns that we're seeing in Ukraine. And I particularly raise the issue of Moldova and what's happening in Transnistria.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Bazin. Appreciate you talking to us.
Happy Easter, Bob.
For more on what the NATO buildup means, we're joined by retired Lieutenant General Ken Penny, the former Chief of Staff of Canada's Air Staff and Deputy NORAD Commander. Mr. Penny, former U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates described Vladimir Putin as a stone-cold killer. How dangerous is the situation on the ground in Ukraine and in Eastern Europe? And do you think this NATO buildup will have any effect on him?
Well, it's difficult to say. I think the Russian imperative here is quite a bit different than what you will see from a NATO perspective. I think they're very impressed with the capability of their military. They're very seized with the situation. And I think Mr. Putin sees an opportunity. So when you put those together, it creates a dangerous situation.
Do you get the sense that he's trying to build and erect a new Berlin Wall?
I don't think we know enough to say something like that. I think what he's more interested in is a greater Russia. I think he's a nationalist, first and foremost. And the techniques that we see unfolding in the Crimea and now in eastern Ukraine are techniques that have been used before by great powers to push their frontiers a little bit further. So it's not new. But when you have such an imbalance between a rather fragile country like Ukraine, which does not have anywhere near the economic or military power of a Russia, and with any particular military or economic help being some distance away from the Ukraine, I think the Russians are seeing an opportunity here.
And you don't think that NATO could mount a military counterpoint or counterattack to Russia, say, if they take Eastern Europe?
I wouldn't say anything is impossible, but if you're a Russian, you are trained in the correlation of forces. Correlation of forces, we would call that military balance situation. It's pretty clear that economically and militarily, Russia is fairly dominant over the Ukraine. And it's also clear that if, say, NATO wanted to do something more active in terms of a military intervention, it would be harder for them to do that. They'd have to deploy a long distance. It's not right on their border. It's a ways to go. That's why I think those countries of NATO that are closer to this particular problem are concerned, because we don't know what the next step might be.
And do you think then that we should be putting more forces in the Baltic countries that are closer to Ukraine and Russia? Because what happened with Hitler is that if you've got to meet these people so they know that there are lines to be drawn.
Well, that's a political exercise. And I guess the foreign ministers were in Brussels not so long ago, and they asked the military staff to do some option analysis. That's been done. And now we're seeing this play out with the latest decision from the NATO Council, and countries are responding. So we haven't seen the full extent of the countries responding yet. We just heard our response. But this is a NATO response in terms of sending a signal and preparing itself for potentially something else.
But you're a former military planner. I'm assuming they have plans or options anyway to put more conventional ground forces and air forces in the Baltic nations to be able to counter Russia.
Yeah, you point out the Baltic nations, and they're on a border with Russia, and there's one situation there, particularly in Lithuania, where there are some a part of Russia that's actually on the Baltic, isolated from the rest of Russia, and that's a geopolitical situation that would concern, I think, the Baltic states. So yes, the fact that they're being reassured by these NATO steps, I think, is an important part of what NATO is doing.
Now, how would you compare NATO's military to the Russian military? Is NATO have a more sophisticated force? Because for a long time, we've been hearing that NATO is not putting enough money into their defenses.
The NATO targets are 2% of GDP for the NATO countries, and there's a number of NATO countries, including ourselves, that don't match that. But overall, NATO has a large military capacity. The question is, really, do they have the military will? Or the political will, I should say. Whereas, you know, on the other side, Putin has that leverage. He's got full support of his assembly, the elected assembly. He's got, I think, a consensus of the Russian population behind him. So he's got a situation where his calculation will be political. The military steps are relatively straightforward from the perspective of a Russian. From the perspective of trying to counter it, it's really a political dilemma for the NATO countries. How far are you prepared to go?
And that we don't know yet.
No.
Well, General Penny, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
No problem.
How far is the NDP leader willing to go to stop the Fair Elections Act from passing? I'll ask Tom Mulcair. And will a Democratic Reform Minister accept the Senate recommendations for change? Conservative Senator Linda Frum up next on Question Period. The Senate has recommended that the government amend its highly contested Fair Elections Act on the heels of opposition from everyone, from senior elections officials to community representatives. But the fiercest opposition to the bill has been from the NDP, who say the Senate changes don't go far enough. NDP leader Tom Mulcair is spending Easter Sunday with his family in Montreal, but I caught up with him last week while he was in Toronto. Mr. Mulcair, before I get to the Fair Elections Act, I have to ask you, what do you make of the RCMP decision to end its criminal investigation of Nigel Wright?
Well, that's exactly what it is. It's a decision on a very specific aspect of this case. Of course, as you know, everyone from the Ethics Commissioner had suspended her own investigation pending the result of this one, so that kicks back in. And it always goes back to the same thing. The root cause of all of this is Stephen Harper naming Mike Duffy as a senator from Prince Edward Island when he wasn't. And everything that happened as a result of that was as a result of what Stephen Harper did. We have a series of contradictory statements by Stephen Harper, the few times we did get answers out of him in the House. So we're going to still continue with this because he's never assumed responsibility for what is in fact his fault.
Well, Mr. Wright didn't commit any criminal wrongdoing. He did set out with Duffy to deceive Canadians. He and Duffy did a hoax on the public, essentially, by having Duffy go on TV and pay the money back when in fact Nigel Wright had.
Exactly, and that goes all back to the famous good to go from the Prime Minister, which Nigel Wright put in one of his emails. So if anybody in the Conservative Party is popping champagne corks right now saying, hey, we didn't get indicted criminally, we've got news for them. There's still a lot to come in this file.
Well, do you think the Prime Minister...